Good afternoon and welcome to Real Talk. I'm your host, Susan McCabe. Thank you for joining us for lunch here on Real Talk. We're here every Tuesday at 12 noon. Real Talk is the show that seeks to answer questions, large and small, and we're always interested in what you'd like to know about. You can send us a request to answer a question, to find an expert to answer that question at realtalk@voiceofvashon.org. Today, the question is, what is happening to folks who are here in this country, legally or illegally, and detained in our very neighborly Northwest Detention Center in Tacoma? Our guest to answer some questions about this situation is Anne Lewis, who, before she lived on Vashon, she and her husband George spent 30 years with the U.S. Foreign Service, the U.S. Agency for International Development in Africa, Asia, and Latin America. She learned a lot there. She has special interest in training in international humanitarian law, and she is a trainer for the American Red Cross. She's here today to speak with us on the work she and others are currently doing as part of the social justice work of the Vashon Unitarian Universalist Fellowship with Tacoma-based Advocates for Immigrants in Detention Northwest. Welcome, Anne Lewis. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Susan.
This is a huge question, a huge topic, and very topical today. Let's start with a description of the Northwest Detention Center in Tacoma. What is it?
Well, you're welcome to look online and see photos of a very dismal gray prison warehouse, which in fact it is. The detention center was built in response to the U.S. government's decision that people who are in hearings to determine whether or not they may legally stay in the United States should be detained in administrative centers rather than being allowed to be free on bail for the most part. In response to that, the U.S. government has contracted with to some extent the U.S. criminal justice system in temporary use of prisons, but primarily through a contract with two different private prison organizations, and some, I guess, 63% of detainees in the United States are now part of this private prison system.
Is it the same company that owns all the detention centers in the country?
No, there are two. One is called CCS, and I can't remember what it stands for. The one that's relevant here is called the GEO Group. That's capital G-E-O. You can look it up. And it's an international, I believe, London-based organization which worldwide provides security and administrative centers, which is, they don't use the word prison. They use administrative centers because people who are there are not criminals. They aren't part of the department of our criminal justice system. They are there in administrative status to await a hearing of whether or not they have reason to be allowed to remain in the United States or whether or not they should be removed or deported.
So how would you compare their experience in the Northwest Detention Center to a prison?
I've been inside. I've had a tour. It's identical. I've been in a number of prisons in my life around the world. And this one is identical to what you would recognize as being I don't know which level of security prison. The inmates are required to wear jumpsuits, determine their level of security. They are in pods. They don't have private rooms or cells. They are allowed out to for recreation 1 hour a day. They are transported from one area to another in chains, in shackles.
In chains.
I've seen it myself. They do have some freedoms, and some of the people who I've spoken with as they've left, I've often asked them what their experience was like. The frightening part is how many of them say that the Northwest Detention Center is one of the best that they've been in. It's not unusual for detainees to be transferred from one center to another. And because the Northwest Detention Center here in Tacoma is the fourth largest in the country, it receives detainees, or it receives people who are undocumented persons, I guess is the word I'll use, from all over the country. So many of them have been perhaps arrested on a traffic stop in San Diego. And then put into the criminal justice system in San Diego, in prisons, and then if San Diego chooses to cooperate with ICE, or the Department of Homeland Security Immigration Enforcement Agency, then they can then be sent to Tacoma. What it means here, in terms of the population that's here, is that it's 88% men. A large majority are from Mexico still, but they do come from all over the world, but also they come from all over the United States. We work as volunteers primarily with people who have been released or have released on bond, or perhaps have been granted asylum, the very lucky ones who win the sweepstakes. But they come, they might have been arrested in Miami or in New York or whatever, and are transferred here, which of course means they're deprived of the benefit of visits from family or people that they know. And they're of course also arrested with whatever it is they happen to be wearing.
Are you allowed to visit them in the detention center, or are you only allowed to work with them after they exit?
The organization, which was started by a group of faith-based organizations who are very concerned about immigration issues in our community, started some years ago and initially started with a program where they could provide visitation for detainees who signed up who would like a visitor. That program is still continuing, and they're always still looking for volunteers who would be willing to commit to do regular visits to detainees who have requested to have a regular visitor. On occasion, because of the contract requires it, GOHS opens the detention center for community visitors.
Ooh.
And so I've had the opportunity to tour as a community visitor. Also, the hearings by law are open to the public. And so there are other volunteers who attend the hearings just to be attentive ears and a public witness.
So how many, perhaps you can tell us, of these people are there because of some sort of crime they've committed?
I myself don't know the proportion of people who are wearing the red jumpsuits, which means that they've committed some kind of crime.
Uh-huh.
But I do know that the vast majority of people have not committed a crime and are simply there awaiting deportation hearings.
Because they are undocumented?
Because of their undocumented
status. So they are primarily undocumented.
They are almost all undocumented, and they may be undocumented for a number of reasons. They may be people who came into the United States and requested asylum. And this, like refugees, are people who have been able to provide evidence and convince the judges that they face a very real possibility of persecution if they return home. And that persecution can be based on race, religion, part of a social group, any number of things. But it can't be just a civil war or economic deprivation. It has to be a specific evidence that they themselves face persecution.
As individuals.
So it's as individuals as part of a group. So it's a high barrier to cross.
That brings me away from the detention center for a moment to Trump's recent announcement that they are going to deport Salvadorans. If you have a sense of how many folks from Salvador are in detention or Salvadorans are here, many of them, for asylum because of the civil war that's been going on there. And I recently read something in the New Yorker about the fact that deportation can be a death sentence for many folks, and that's been proven.
I just read that article. It was very shocking.
Yes, very shocking. So
the temporary protective status is a strange beast that hasn't been around very long. There are a number of ways in which non-citizens can legally live in the United States. They can be lawful permanent residents, which is LPRs, which means a green card.
Mm-hmm.
That means that for a number of reasons, these are people who've been granted asylum. These are refugees, the difference, in case you're interested, is someone who comes to the United States. You're on a hockey team. You're in a ballet troupe. You get into the United States, and then specifically, within 1 year of their arrival, specifically has to file for asylum on the basis that they need the protection of the United States in order to, for their own safety, personal safety. Refugees are anyone who's crossed an international border. You can't, in other words, if you live in South Sudan and there's fighting and you head to another part of this vast country, you aren't a refugee, even though you are displaced. You have to step your foot across an international border in order to be a refugee. So refugees have to come into the United States. So they might come across a border, they might find their way on an airplane.
So you're saying that both asylum seekers and refugees can attain temporary protective status?
They can attain, lawful LP. They can retain green cards, which means that they can work, get a work permit. They can get a Social Security card. And after a number of years, depending on their case, they can apply to have a path for citizenship. They can become citizens. Temporary protective status is a rather new mechanism. I think it started in 2001 or so. And it was established as a response to a need. I believe it started with the Liberians, where there is a national crisis. Sometimes it could be either a natural disaster, a flood, an earthquake, or whatever, or perhaps a war which particularly targets one portion of the population, where under an executive order, this is not the law, an executive order, which is what gives Trump the permission, I mean the authority to change it. But under the temporary protective status, people who are of that nationality for a undetermined amount of time are given relief from deportation. That has been renewed annually. The number of countries or the names of the countries who've been granted TPS has changed, but there are about half a dozen that currently have temporary protective status. The temporary protective status that was established for El Salvador was on the basis of the earthquake.
Oh.
And it was not on the basis of the ongoing civil war. We all know the ugly history of, or some, of American involvement in the drug wars and the civil wars in El Salvador. Despite that, the TPS was really on the basis of whether or not they have literal shelter, have the buildings been repaired. And on that very, very narrow definition, the Trump administration has decided that El Salvador, the electricity's on and the roofs have been repaired from the earthquake, and therefore the temporary status should be relieved.
So those people who are at risk for their lives or who have lived here for 20 years, gotten jobs, bought homes, raised children, are now eligible to be deported back to El Salvador, where they may be killed in the civil war.
Absolutely, that can happen. We don't know exactly what's going to happen. I believe it's supposed to be removed. The protective status is supposed to be removed in March, which is what,
this year,
6 weeks from now. So that people who are here now, who are El Salvadorians, are, I hope, scrambling to get legal protection right now. But speaking of legal protection.
Yes, let's go back to the detention center.
I'd like to get back to the detention center.
Yes, let's.
Because people who are detained are in administrative detention under the Department of DHS, Department of Homeland Security.
Yes.
They are not criminals, and they're not part of the criminal justice system, and they do not enjoy the right of a court-appointed attorney. That right was established, as we know, for indigent people or anyone in the United States who is in a criminal case has the right to a court-appointed attorney. That does not exist, and the vast majority of detainees in the Northwest Detention Center do not have the benefit of representation by an attorney. I just read that I guess 88% of the people who have been deported have from the detention center did not have an attorney.
Let me ask you this then. How do they manage to get out to get legal assistance, and how many people are in there for how long?
Ah, there are about 1,500 people in there now, I'm told. And the time is supposed to, I don't know what the time is now. I believe the average is somewhere around 2 months. However, I personally know of cases of 18 months, and I know of cases of 3 weeks. I'm not certain what the average is now. But I want to make a point about legal representation.
Yes, please.
Because although they don't have the right for a supported legal representation, they do have the right to have an attorney if it's a private attorney. If they themselves or their family or supporters are able to secure representation, they can certainly have an attorney, and they should, of course.
Immigration attorneys, I presume?
Yes. And we're blessed here with a wonderful organization called the Northwest Immigrant Rights Project, which has, there are many other immigration attorneys, but the Northwest Immigrant Rights Project also educates the community. It has wonderful information. There's a handbook called Immigration 101 available on their website. And they provide pro bono service because immigration attorneys volunteer through NORP, as it's called.
NORP.
NORP. to support detainees and other people who have immigration questions.
You're listening to Real Talk at 101.9 FM, KVSHLP, Vashon Island, Washington, the voice of Vashon. I'm Susan McCabe, your host, and we're talking with Ann Lewis about the Northwest Detention Center in Tacoma, immigrant rights, and how we can help those folks. We can do this thanks to Windermere Vashon Real Estate. We thank them for their support, providing all the support for all our community information programming and making our emergency alert service possible here on the Voice of Vashon. Thank you for listening. We're going to get back to Ann now. Ann, you were talking about legal representation for detainees in the Northwest Detention Center.
Yes.
You said some folks are there for as long as 18 months, some for just a few weeks. What's the difference? How do people end up being there so long, and how do others get out more quickly?
I believe it has to do, of course, specifically with their case. And some of them may have been in Tacoma for 2 weeks, but may have been in, there's a detention center in Oregon, right near the Dalles, and they might have been there for some time, or in Texas for some time. So I'm sorry that I don't really know what the average stay is, nor do I know exactly what determines when the judge allows their hearing. When they're first brought in, they have an initial hearing where they get an initial briefing of what to expect and what the regulations are. They then begin the process to apply for asylum if they wish relief. They can say they want to self-deport. In other words, they're willing to voluntarily leave the country. They want to have then a date where they're going to have their hearing. There's more than one level of the hearing, and that gets into a level of detail I'm not very good at.
And the hearings are designed to decide what happens next for them.
Exactly. What are the options?
They could choose self-deportation.
Yes.
They could be deported by the state.
Yes.
Do they have options for staying in the country?
Yes. And those are the people that we're assisting. Because people who are being deported are sent immediately by bus to the airport, put on a plane, and shipped out. You never see them again.
Wow.
People who, yes, they don't have a right to visit. They don't have a right to pack home and pack up. That's it. People who are provided release or a stay for their deportation may be released on bond, where family members would post a bond, that then it's like bail, that they're committed to show up on the other hearings as they go through the process. The bond rates I have seen have ranged from $20,000 to $30,000.
Oh,
these are not insignificant, and most of the people who are coming out, not all, but most of them are indigent. So
sure.
There are also bond bailsmen. There are a lot of scams out there, but also they have to post cash, anywhere from $10,000 to $20,000, $30,000.
How often does that happen?
All I can tell you from our experience, is that an average of 8 to 10 people are released a day, a Monday through Friday at the detention center. They aren't all released on bond. They might also be granted asylum if they've been able to convince the courts of their real possibility of persecution. Some of them have been released on the basis of a Violence Against Women Act, which is in fact a law. There's also some that I've seen who have been released on the basis of given a special visa for victims of trafficking. But most of the ones that we see that get out have been granted asylum or else have been released on bond on their own recognizance to attend for future hearings. The complication is those future hearings often take place in Kentucky or wherever they might have a cousin or any kind of connection.
There just seem to be one thing after another to make this more and more complicated for people.
It is very complicated.
Let's talk about their treatment in the detention center. You said that the detention center is owned by a private organization. How do the finances work?
The GEO company, others know better than I, but I believe they have a 10-year contract.
With the federal government.
Yes, with the federal government. They are, unlike most federal government contracts, they have a quota of number of beds that they are required to fill each year. Each year. Therefore, they bounce people around in order to make sure that the quotas fit. That's why someone might be in Wisconsin and then in Tacoma.
Oh, I see.
But also, they get a, I understand, I don't know the details of the contract, but I understand that they pay about $129. We, taxpayers, pay GEO Group about $129 per night per bed. And the GEO Group last year, I think, filed about $2 billion in profits.
Well, I wonder if they pay their taxes.
No, I think they have.
They'll have the corporate tax rate reduced. Isn't that lovely?
Another aspect of this, I might ask about this, is that because also there are a lot of things going on currently, and I don't know how much time we have, but I want to make sure that we know some of the things that are going on that are efforts to give some hope that this situation might be relieved.
Are you referring to State's Attorney Ferguson's suit? Yeah, let's talk about that.
Yes. Recently, Bob Ferguson, on behalf of the citizens of the state of Washington, has filed suit on the basis of the fact that people. You asked how people are treated inside.
Yes, right. That was
they have the opportunity, which may or may not be coerced, and that's a key part of the suit, to work within the facility for a dollar a day. And the dollar a day means that they work in the kitchens or they work in the laundry service or they might work in the library. They do janitorial work. In other words, they do the work that would be available to other people at legal rates, minimum wage, if they were not being required to use prison labor at a dollar a day.
They are required? To use prison labor?
Well, I guess GEO does, yeah. I mean, that's what they do. Okay. My wording was inexact. The basis of my understanding of Ferguson's case is that by paying a dollar a day is violation of our state labor laws.
Yes.
And also it denies our local labor market in Tacoma access to those jobs, which should be advertised and competed, mm-hmm. And should be covered at least under the minimum wage. You could look it up. There's some movement now in a countersuit or a counter move by GEO has been to try to change their designation, which they claim if they designate themselves in fact as a prison, they might then be not have to use the minimum wage. In other words,
they would not.
They would be on the prison wage level.
They would not be required to comply with Washington state law because it would be a federal facility.
Yeah,
and the federal facility is not required to pay minimum wage.
No.
Well, so the status of these detainees sounds to me like prisoners and or slaves. rather than people under what the euphemistic phrase of administrative detention would suggest. So who's working on the designation of these people? How, because they are not Americans, they are not eligible for essentially due process with at least an attorney provided by the courts. They can have access to immigration attorneys through the...
If they pay for one themselves.
Oh, they have to pay for it themselves.
Oh, yeah.
They can't get the pro bono. There was
an
organization.
No, that's the thing. They can't get pro bono. So Northwest Immigrant Rights Project,
yes,
is a non-government organization, a nonprofit, with donations who provide then the pro bono attorneys.
So they make that information available to the detainees in the Northwest Detention Center.
Yes, they can meet with them.
This might be an unfair question, but looking ahead, what do you see as the future of these detention centers? Do you see, I know this is unfair, Ann Lewis, do you see that those folks like you and other and organizations like yours, we want to talk about that before we go, can actually have an impact on federal law regarding these detention centers? Is there any hope that they will be either abolished or at least amended to be more humane?
I don't know about being humane. I am optimistic, however, that the bilateral, bipartisan cries for immigration reform from both sides of the aisle will be heard and are starting to be addressed, even though it's very awkward and they're starting out with in the wrong way and they're picking on one particular group. I believe that the discussion that's taking place now with DACA and with the removal of the TPS for El Salvadoreños is going to lead toward, it may take a long time, it may take another administration, probably will, but it's going to lead toward eventual a comprehensive immigration reform. And the most crucial feature of that, in my mind, is that people who are here now in the United States will be given a legal pathway to citizenship. And that's been the greatest barrier at all times. If people had access to a reasonable, legal, clear, transparent way to come immigrate to the United States legally, we would not have the problem we have now.
With these poor people detained in the Northwest Detention Center. I have one last quick question for you. There's a Vashon connection, and there's an organization here that is working with the folks at the Northwest Detention Center. Can you tell us about that and how folks can get in touch if they want to help?
There are a number of organizations on Vashon who are very involved in this. Indivisible Vashon has an immigration and refugee working group. They meet once a month, tomorrow, for example. Our Vashon Island Unitarian Fellowship works with Advocates for Immigration and Detention Northwest, and we have two primary activities. Once a month, we attend a vigil outside of the detention center where we meet with families who are coming to visit their family members and provide really a listening ear, and it is a vigil rather than a protest, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
We have volunteers like myself who work at what's called the Welcome Center. So we work with detainees who are released. So we get the lucky ones. There are five or six of us on Vashon who go cover on Thursdays. And we, at a recreational vehicle that's parked outside, we assist people in moving from the detention center back to their homes, to their families, to safety. We provide them with coats, jackets, and travel arrangements.
If I want to volunteer, how do I contact someone?
I would look on the website for AIDNW, Advocates for Immigration in Detention Northwest, or of course call me and some of the other my other Vashon colleagues who volunteer in one way or another.
Thank you, Ann Lewis. We will put this information on the voiceofvashon.org website so people can check it out if they want to help those folks who are stuck in the Northwest Detention Center thanks to our draconian laws regarding immigration. This is Real Talk. We've been talking with Ann Lewis of the group that supports or tries to help the folks who are in the Northwest Detention Center. There's a whole lot more to talk about on the subject of immigration. This has been Real Talk. We're here every Tuesday at 12 noon. Next week, we talk with Myrna Hecht, who has stories of refugees in this country, personal stories. 12 noon next Tuesday. Thanks to producers Kaya Boding, Gail Kellner, and Bill West, and Luke McQuillan, who wrote our theme music. Thanks for listening.